Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Christopher Jones-Cruz, and Marcia James. Later, Jill Robbins and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, plans to make internet connections easier to get in Africa were hurt this month when a rocket exploded in the U.S. state of Florida. The rocket, belonging to the company SpaceX, was carrying a communications satellite for the social media network Facebook. Facebook had planned to use some of the satellite's coverage to bring internet service to people in countries south of the Sahara Desert. Facebook and Google are working on other ways to bring internet access to Africa, but it will be some time before they are ready. Faiz Bashir heads Flexi SAF, an education technology company in Abuja, Nigeria. He says internet access is too costly for most Nigerians. If you want very good internet, it's very expensive. Usually, only big companies and rich people can afford it, he said. The International Telecommunication Union says about 25% of people in Africa will use the internet this year. That is more than last year's rate of 20%. But it is still the lowest rate in the world. 3 years ago, Facebook said it would try to bring internet access to more people in Africa and other areas of the world. Mark Zuckerberg, who leads Facebook, talked about the plan in a Facebook video.
Our plan is to make basic internet services affordable so that everyone with a phone can join the knowledge economy.
One part of that plan began in Nigeria in May. It is called Free Basics. Anyone with a smartphone can see some health, education, weather, job search, and other sites, including Facebook, at no cost. Bashir says it is easier now for him to communicate with family members in isolated areas of the country. Free Basics is now available in 48 countries in Africa, the Middle East, Asia Pacific, and Latin America. Facebook also offers a service called Express Wi-Fi. People can pay to use the Wi-Fi. Facebook planned to expand its services, but then came the setback of September 1st. USLaunchReport.com released a video showing the explosion of the SpaceX rocket. It was not the only problem Facebook has had this year as it tries to give more people access to the internet. In February, R.S. Sharma, the head of India's telecommunications agency, announced new rules that make it harder for Facebook to offer its Free Basics service in the country. No service provider shall charge differential pricing on the basis of application, platforms or websites, or source, he said. Differential pricing means charging two prices to different groups for the same service. The rules pleased some internet activists who believe companies should not be able to decide what websites a person can see. It is not known how many new internet users the Free Basics plan has created. A group called the Alliance for an Affordable Internet looked at who was using the plan and of others that offer free internet access in 8 countries. Research manager Dhanaraj Thakur says the group found that 88% of the users were not new to the internet. Thakur says people were using Free Basics to visit Facebook and other websites, but were using their data plans to watch videos. Facebook says it wants to help everyone in the world go online. Last month, it announced a successful test of a solar-powered drone or unmanned aircraft. It is designed to stay in the air for weeks, providing internet service to rural areas. Google is also helping rural people get access to the internet by using large balloons floating high above the earth. It is not known if Facebook plans to launch another satellite.
Three months ago, voters in the United Kingdom decided to withdraw from the European Union. Now, some supporters of the planned withdrawal are calling loudly for a quick, sharp break with the EU. Last June, 52% of the voters agreed on a proposal for Britain to cancel its EU membership. That membership made Britain part of a political and economic alliance with 27 other countries. The voters' decision to cancel or exit the membership is known as Brexit. The official process to leave the EU takes 2 years. It begins when the British government invokes Article 50 of a treaty. Britain's new Prime Minister, Theresa May, has repeatedly said she plans to delay invoking Article 50. But hard Brexit supporters say the government should act quickly before the end of the year. Those supporters note that the British stock market is strong and that numbers related to jobs and sales are high. In other words, the British economy is doing well. On Sunday, leading Brexiters formed a group to pressure the government to start the exit process. The group is called Change Britain. Organizers say it aims to deliver the UK's referendum result in the most effective way. Prime Minister Theresa May campaigned for Britain to remain in the EU. Now, she is walking a political tightrope. Some people in her Conservative Party want to make sure Britain breaks completely with the EU. If Britain does not, those party members might revolt. At the same time, Britain's trading partners want the country to remain a member of the EU single market. They are pressuring the Prime Minister to find a way to stay close economically to the rest of Europe. One of the Brexit supporters in May's government is Ian Duncan Smith. He said last week that the EU bloc is currently a complete mess. Duncan Smith worries that the longer Britain delays the exit process, the closer the country will remain to the EU. Several leading Brexiters in the government spoke privately with VOA. They worry the Prime Minister might try to negotiate a deal between Britain and the EU. The deal would enable Britain to stay in the EU single market. But Brexit supporters fear the deal would probably require Britain to accept migrants and provide financially to the EU budget. The international community is also speaking out about Brexit. Last weekend, Japan's foreign ministry took an unusual step. It published a paper on the effects of the Brexit vote. The paper urged Britain to keep full access to the single market. And it said the government should let British businesses offer jobs to EU nationals without restrictions. Japanese businesses are major employers in Britain. The Japanese aren't the only ones who are worried. American bankers also believe a hard Brexit would be bad for their investments and businesses. They have already created plans to move workers from London to Dublin, Amsterdam, Paris, or Frankfurt. But Brexiters do not believe withdrawing from the EU will affect their economy poorly. They point to the country's currently strong economy, calling it a Brexit boom. The situation, they say, shows Britain will continue to do well on its own outside the EU. But many economists say it is too soon to judge the economic results of Brexit. One reason, they say, is that Britain has not yet withdrawn from the EU. But they warn the longer-term signs are not good. Rupert Pennant-Ree is a former deputy governor of the Bank of England. He says the strongest clue of what Brexit might mean for Britain comes from international financial markets. In a story in the Financial Times newspaper, he noted that all the currency markets show British assets are worth less than they used to be. Land, property, companies, bank deposits, government debt, everything in the UK has been marked down against the rest of the world, he wrote. Conservative Party leader and former government minister John Whittingdale rejects talk about economic dangers. He says people who do not like Brexit are just looking for problems. Whittingdale told Britain's Sunday Telegraph newspaper that delaying Brexit gives opponents time to try and stop the process. Those opponents, called Remainers, still hope Britain won't withdraw from the EU. They are waiting for the result of legal challenges to the Brexit vote. But legal experts say those challenges are very unlikely to succeed. I'm Mario Ritter.
American officials say U.S. citizens should continue to talk about the balance between privacy and security. Intelligence and security officials from the military and federal government joined experts from the computer industry and universities recently at a two-day-long meeting in Washington. They said complete privacy would hurt efforts to fight computer crime and terrorism. James Comey, the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, was among those attending the Intelligence and National Security Summit. He said he understands that people do not want to have all of their personal information made public.
I don't want anybody looking at my stuff. I don't want anybody looking at my banking information, my health care information.
But Comey said he must be concerned for the country's safety. He said the need for safety and the desire for privacy are sometimes in conflict. He said government officials and civil rights activists must work together to find a solution.
We need to stop demonizing each other, stop saying it's impossible, stop saying, oh, you want to destroy this or destroy that, and sit down and say our values are in conflict that we all share. What could we do?
Comey noted that Americans have never had the guarantee of complete privacy.
The bargain our founders struck was, your stuff is private unless the people of the United States need to see it.
The U.S. Constitution does not state clearly that citizens have a right to privacy. However, the Fourth Amendment says people have a right to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. The amendment guards against unreasonable searches and seizures, and says government officials must have probable cause before a warrant can be approved. It also says the warrant must describe the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. The Cornell University Law School says the goal of this part of the amendment is to protect people's right to privacy and freedom from arbitrary governmental intrusions. In order to be protected by the amendment, a citizen must demonstrate an expectation of privacy, one that society is prepared to recognize as reasonable under the circumstances. In other words, expectations of privacy can change if society changes. Michael Rogers is the director of the National Security Agency.
This has become such a charged emotional issue that we're not really having that dialogue, and we're not getting into what's in the realm of the possible.
Rogers said there should be a discussion about what law enforcement officials can do and another about what they should do. He said that is a political discussion. John Brennan is the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. He urged a quick resolution to the tensions between security and privacy. He said the government and private business need to work together to find out how things should be done in the future.
If we're going to help to secure and ensure the prosperity of that digital environment in the future, since it is privately owned and operated. And that's why I think this interaction and cross-fertilization between the public and private sector needs to be the wave of the future. And I think here in the United States, we can set the path for how this needs to be done.
I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
This is What's Trending Today. Thursday marked the start of National Hispanic Heritage Month in the United States. Hispanic Heritage Month is observed from September 15 through October 15. It celebrates the history and culture of people with ancestry in Spain, Mexico, and the Spanish-speaking countries of the Americas. The observance started in 1968 as Hispanic Heritage Week. September 15 is an important day for many Latin American countries. Five of them: Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua celebrate their independence on that day. The hashtag Hispanic Heritage Month trended Thursday on social media in the United States.
several U.S. lawmakers marked the start of Hispanic Heritage Month in a different way. They offered a bill to create an American Latino Museum in Washington, D.C. The proposed museum would be part of the Smithsonian Institution. The bill has support from the country's two main political parties. And that's what's trending today. I'm Marcia James.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. The 1954 American film On the Waterfront helped make actor Marlon Brando a star. Brando played the main character, a dock worker named Terry Malloy. In the film, Malloy meets face-to-face with a gangster at a seaport. The two men fight in front of many dock workers. The fight is terrible, and it lasts a long time. You may not realize it, but describing this fight scene can teach you a lot about the structure of the English language. In fact, telling about this fight scene can show you how to use adverbial prepositional phrases. Do not be frightened. This report will be much less painful than the hard punches thrown by Marlon Brando's character.
Adverbials are words or terms that give information about time, place, reason, or the way something is done. They answer questions like how often, where, why, when. They are traditionally defined as modifiers of verbs. Adverbials take several shapes: adverbs, verb phrases, and subordinate clauses, for example. Today, we begin our report on adverbials with one of the most common adverbial structures, the prepositional phrase.
Adverbials are important because they can change or amend almost any of the basic sentence patterns in English. In other everyday grammar stories, we explored five common sentence patterns that form the basic structure of many sentences in English. You can read about these patterns on our website. Adverbials are one of the reasons that sentences are longer than the basic sentence structures. Adverbials add more information to a sentence. One of the most useful ways to include more information is to add a prepositional phrase.
A prepositional phrase is a group of words that begins with a preposition and ends in a noun, pronoun, or noun phrase. Prepositional phrases generally have two parts: the preposition and the object of the preposition. Learning and understanding prepositions is important. Of the 20 most commonly used words in English, 8 are prepositions. The object of the preposition is often a noun phrase, a group of words that acts like a noun in a sentence. Do not worry. All of this sounds much more complex than it actually is. Think back to the movie from the beginning of the story, On the Waterfront. On is a preposition. The waterfront is the object of the preposition. The name of the film, On the Waterfront, is an example of a prepositional phrase.
English often puts together groups of prepositional phrases to make sentences longer. Now consider this sentence that tells about the fight scene in On the Waterfront.
Terry Molloy fought.
Do you remember how we told you that adverbials give information about place, time, or reason? If you wanted to describe the fight scene from the movie, you could add a prepositional phrase to tell where Terry Molloy fought.
Terry Molloy fought.
Where?
On the waterfront.
You can add a second prepositional phrase to tell about how long he fought.
Terry Molloy fought.
Where?
On the waterfront.
How long?
For 3 hours.
Then you could add another prepositional phrase if you wanted to tell about when he fought.
Terry Molloy fought.
Where?
On the waterfront.
How long?
For 3 hours.
When?
On Saturday.
Now, you do not want to include too many prepositional phrases in a sentence. That might confuse or lose your reader. However, you can still see that you can build a long sentence from a simple starting point, such as Terry Molloy fought.
Adverbial prepositional phrases are fun because you can move them to different places in the sentence. Moving adverbial phrases lets you emphasize or highlight different words in the sentence. There is one general rule you should remember. You can move time phrases easier than other kinds of prepositional phrases. This idea is not as complex as you might think. Consider our example.
Terry Molloy fought on the waterfront for 3 hours on Saturday.
You can move the phrases to say this.
For 3 hours on Saturday, Terry Molloy fought on the waterfront.
You see that the phrases have moved, but the sentence has all of the same words, and it still has the same meaning. Or you could say this.
On Saturday, Terry Molloy fought on the waterfront for 3 hours.
In these two examples, the phrases that tell about time are in the front of the sentence. English speakers usually do not put the location or place adverbial phrase at the beginning of the sentence. You might read a sentence like this, but it is not as common.
On the waterfront, Terry Molloy fought for 3 hours on Saturday.
This sentence could be used in poetry or writing. However, it has a more artistic feel to it. In general, English speakers do not speak this way.
Recognizing and understanding adverbials will help you with your speaking and writing. You can use adverbials to play up certain words in the sentence, a common strategy in political speeches, for example. Adverbial prepositional phrases can be difficult, but learning how to recognize and use them will help improve your writing and speaking skills. They will also help you on your next English test, too. I'm Jill Robbins.
I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.